accelerate.
All right. So I apologize for having already missed most of the informal discussions we've had so far. So I don't know what the expectations are, but my expectation is actually to have a discussion. So if you're expecting this is one of those discussions where I do all the talking, I think that it's going to be very short. And the motivation was that we're talking a lot about the early universe and crazy ideas and so forth, but there is a crazy thing going on in the late universe, that namely it's accelerating, that we'd like to understand. And this very likely has something to do with gravity and or quantum mechanics, and therefore perhaps string theory. So just to get the ideas out there about what people think might be going on. So the setup, if I can remind you very briefly, the universe is accelerating. If we believe general relativity and a Friedman-Robertson-Walker cosmology, then the Friedman equation says that h squared is rho over 3m Planck squared. So I use the reduced Planck mass, 1 over the square root of 8 pi g. This is the Hubble constant. You've heard of that, a dot over a. That's the energy density of the universe. Everyone is happy with this, right? Just checking. It's OK. There's also curvature, which I've measured and it's zero. So I'm not going to include that one. I could include that. But everyone is, I'm happy to, yeah, okay. Yeah, I, not yet.
I have an answer. For a few years I was teaching general relativity using his notes, but now he has a book which says over.
That's right. And they make great Christmas presents as well. And don't just get one for yourself. You want to have a supply on hand, party favors, and so forth. So we take it for granted that we all agree now that the universe is accelerating. Okay, there's evidence from supernovae, from the microwave background, and from the fact that David Letterman was talking about it for almost a couple of weeks ago, and he had people from the Sloan Digital Sky Survey on his show. So I think that we agree that the universe is accelerating.
Did they have a top 10 list?
I don't know if they had a top 10 list or not. They took an observational cosmologist bowling. It was not a high point in our publicity relations. So the numbers, just to get things straight, the numbers, the Hubble constant has units of mass, if you set C equals H bar equals 1, and it's about 10 to the minus 33 electron volts. The Planck scale, you may have heard of, is about 10 to the 27 electron volts. And therefore, the energy density in the vacuum, if you believe, let's call it dark energy, generic name for something that is making the universe accelerate. If you believe this is most of the universe, we believe it's about 70%. And this turns out to be, have units to make this work out right, of mass to the fourth. So we call it mass dark energy to the fourth, just dimensionally. And the number turns out to be about 10 to the minus 3 electron volts. So in other words, the energy scale, or the mass scale, characteristic of dark energy, is about 10 to the minus 15 times a TeV, which you might think of as the energy scale characteristic of particle physics. You might have more definite ideas that it's the energy scale of low energy supersymmetry breaking or something like that. But it is an experimentally recognized and important energy scale. And for future reference, a TeV is 10 to the minus 15 times the Planck scale. That may or may not mean anything. It's the same number, 10 to the minus 15. Okay, so that's the current situation. Any questions? I used to give much longer talks about that, but now it's all been absorbed. Good, so my plan now is just to list, so I came up with a brief classification of what could be going on, what the possibilities are, and then I'll just open it up, see what you think. So possibility one is that, so there's a vacuum energy, and the vacuum energy is the vacuum energy. And so there is, in other words, a nearly unique vacuum, and we live in it, and it has a certain energy. May or may not be actually unique, probably not. So if you like, the picture one draws associated with this is you have an energy, and you have some expectation values of some fields or otherwise something that parameterizes your configuration space of what state you can be in, and it looks like this. And there we are, some non-zero energy. That's a possibility. There's actually sub-possibilities here. A, it is a calculable number. Maybe this number here, m dark energy in this model, is something that if you knew the supersymmetry breaking scale and the mass of the electron and so forth, you could calculate. Or it's just a constant of nature. It's an independent parameter. And you'll never calculate it, and we just got lucky. Heavy sigh associated with that one. Possibility number two is, again, there is a vacuum energy, but there are many of them. So there, we live in one of a large number. There are many densely spaced vacua, and we live in one of them. So the picture we draw here, same axes, but it looks like this. And there we are, right there. These may or may not be connected in the configuration space, whatever you like.
Sorry, what do you mean by dense? You don't mean in the vacuum?
I mean there's a lot of them. Okay. That's all I mean. There's a gazillion different vacua. I understand.
I think what you mean is that there are many with similar values of lambda, but they could be separated by large amounts in plane space.
That is, yes. I mean that there are many and they're separated closely. They may or may not be separated. Many densely spaced in values of the cosmological constant.
And the separation will be of order of the value, or?
Yeah, let's say it's less than 10 to the minus 3 electron volts. Okay?
There was another idea of ground entanglement in the Lepsius staircase.
Yeah.
But it was not random.
That's a subset of this idea.
It's not a subset.
You shouldn't take the picture too literally. There's many, read the words. Right. So I was very happy.
I think that's why I made this point. So, okay. There's a difference between having them widely separated in field space, where the main world would be very heavy to go one to the other, and the other one is where they're very close to field space.
Okay.
So maybe A and B.
That is a difference.
Well, yeah, that's
different. So those are different.
Okay.
Sorry, what was the beginning of the comment?
I mean, I think it's pretty natural to get, for example, values of the string coupling that go like rational number of fluxes.
So are you're arguing in favor of this, or you're arguing in favor of this? Yes, that's right. So there are certainly, I think, in the space of all possibilities, both of these are real. I mean, these are both actually possible. I have four of them. So the third one is that we're not in the vacuum. Yet, maybe. Maybe we'll get there someday. The picture associated with this is like this. And there we are, rolling down, albeit slowly. So I was happy to see in Wadi's talk the other day, you know, the picture, a little potential. I'm glad that string theorists have caught on to that, because we cosmologists have been making decades of progress just from drawing that picture, and you can talk about it, explain the whole universe, really. And the final possibility is that Einstein is wrong, and that gravity changes. So for cosmological purposes, h squared is then not rho over 3 m Planck squared. Whatever it is, I don't know.
Strictly speaking, that equation is not going to be enough, right? That doesn't tell you acceleration. You need to know something about the pressure, right? If we had just dots satisfying that equation, the universe would not be accelerating.
That's right. Right. So this possibility is that there isn't anything but dust, but we're accelerating anyway. That's what I mean.
I guess his point is that one equation is not enough.
You're using that schema.
Either you use the two equations,
no.
If you say that this is not the equation.
Right. if this equation with an equal sign were right, we would not be accelerating if the universe were dominated by dust. Therefore, this equation would have to be wrong. There are other things that would also be true.
I don't know, unless rho dot is not, I mean, you could.
Well,
you could
so then we're in one of these three. Yeah, so I would count that as some, if rho dot is not a to the minus 3, then I would count that as this, but that's okay.
Modify,
you know,
I'm going to modify one of the two equations, at least.
Right, so I'm going to modify Einstein's equations. We all know what we're doing.
1, 2, 3 are in Einstein's equations.
That's right, yes.
And 4 is just something else, like what Dwight is going
on. Yes.
You really don't have four-dimensional Einstein equations, all of them.
Yes.
There's a fifth possibility.
Good, so that was the first question. Are there any other possibilities?
Sure, it's the answer we all had 10 years ago. We don't understand the vacuum energy. It could be some completely new physics or something that we
don't have. Isn't that why, isn't that four?
I mean, could it be any one of, I mean, I thought I was just...
Could be one, then, no?
So, there's vacuum energy or there's not. It's dynamical or it's not. If it's not, it's one of them or there's a lot of them. So I thought that was a... Those are all the possibilities. No, that we proved that, yes.
It can't be encoded as a potential, but some equation of state coming from some form of matter.
Sure. So I didn't label this V and I didn't label this phi. So all this means is that there's some energy density. I think we all agree that there are fields whose expectation values we could change and get a different energy density, even though it wouldn't be a minimum or anything like that. So this is extremely schematic, meaning that there's a field configuration, and if you change it, the energy density goes up. So I'm trying to be as comprehensive and inclusive and non-judgmental as possible. Okay, so...
I think like Gary was suggesting was a field theory or something like that, rather than...
Yeah. Somebody's wrong. Yeah.
New physics.
New physics. Okay, that's good.
What is the probability that the experiments are wrong?
Very low. Okay.
10 to the minus.
I'll put that over here. 5. Not accelerating. I don't count that as a real. That's a different discussion. So that's why specifically we all want to know why this is not a big number.
That's part of 3. Yeah. It's not necessarily a different discussion. The answer would be if you suppose that you found a mechanism to make the molecular quantum small, that
yes.
could logically contain.
They may someday be the same discussion. But so it's a different part of the same discussion or something like that. I think this is still an interesting discussion. Well, so maybe that's a point of view. A point of view you could take is I don't care because I don't yet know why the cosmological constant is not 60 orders of magnitude bigger. And until I know that, I'm not even going to think about this question.
So unless we consider 4, if we do not consider version 4, I think what the data are pointing out that it is really positive, and it is this 10 to the minus whatever.
There's something.
Not zero.
Some
if
positive number.
One, two, three.
Yeah.
No, from what we know in string theory, it's as hard to explain positive as it is to explain.
It's hard, yeah. That's.
There is
Eva, yes?
We've given the spectrum of string vacua that we now seem to know there. Anything we should have predicted non zero, we wouldn't have known the scale, but we would not have predicted zero.
At least a TeV, right?
I think in the discrete form we would have just said it's not zero, we don't really know the scale, but...
Well, right, but if you choose randomly a number between a TeV and minus a TeV, your answer is of order a TeV usually, not of order 10 to minus 15 TeV.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it's not a mystery that it's not zero.
There is maybe a possibility,
yes.
Which, however, I would not even advertise seriously.
Okay.
even me. and that is, of course, all experiments are based on the assumption that our universe is about homogeneous, and that's what we see. But that's also based on the assumption that we are not living in the center of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there is a possibility that we are living like in the center of a void, and strangely enough, this possibility really appears when you use certain measure of probability calculations in eternal inflation. And that is really a dirty thing, even to my standards. but nevertheless, when we ask observers, are you sure that this is completely impossible? And the answers say, yeah, but everybody knows that this cannot be. Okay, so we also knew that it cannot be that the cosmological constant is not zero because it's ugly. Well, so maybe living in the center of the universe is also ugly. Well,
if you live in the center of a void,
then the way that a supernova which is close to you and supernova which is further from you will depend on the density distribution. And you may interpret what you think like a cosmological constant just mistakenly.
It's not one void among many, it's that we live in a non-isotropic universe that is spherically symmetric around us.
And you still have the mystery of a small cosmological constant. I mean,
there
would be no need for cosmological constant whatsoever.
Is isotropic.
Because what you will see like acceleration of the universe, this is just...
No, but you need it to be zero.
It may be absolutely zero. It may not be.
So you still have a big explanation.
I'm saying that if you take this leap of faith, then you may not even need, assuming that right now there is a non-zero cosmological constant. And I seriously do not know what is ugly. The cosmological constant on living in the center, in both cases,
to explain the present, the observed acceleration, quote unquote.
That's a good issue, and I know only one person who is half seriously working on this right now. So I'm just saying that because this is so unconventional, because nobody would like him to speak in this direction.
What density distribution do you need?
The density distribution is that we are in the minimum, and the density is growing away from us.
And so you need the radius of this hall of the order of another radius.
It is not the radius, it's just you really need
the scale of
the scale of variation, yes, of the order of Hubble.
And the height. At the Hubble, I mean.
It's monotonically growing.
Well, you need to, and density at the Hubble scale, say, differ from your density, I don't even know, maybe 10%, maybe 1%, I did not really calculate. So it is not something completely outrageously dramatic. It's not that you are surrounded by a wall with a huge energy density.
Now, when you derive this from anthropic what numbers do you get?
Shall I give a talk about it?
I think you're signed up next week already, so you could mention it.
I didn't suppose that I would be speaking about this.
Not at all.
By the way, is it potentially rule-outable by these measurements of supernovae between redshifts of 1 and 2 that seem to show that there was a decelerating period? I mean, you'd predict a consistent fake acceleration?
I do not really know.
It would be worth checking.
I know that I have I have in my bag a draft of the paper written by my student who was trying to do something about that. But it is all, depends on many, many things.
Right.
And simply because nobody really seriously from these working observers even consider this outrageous option. So I'm just saying, this is an outrageous
option.
The way
to check this is to have an expedition to the other star, to half the Hubble radius and do observations from there.
Oh, do you want to go there?
Then you just need the void a little bit larger and they will look like it.
Okay, so I will respond to this by actually including a fifth possibility that we're not really accelerating. So this includes both Andre's suggestion and Tony's question, that somehow there's something dramatic in our interpretation of the observations that we're missing.
So are you going to also comment and discuss Weinberg's prediction of the range quote-unquote prediction?
I'm not discussing anything.
No, what about Weinberg? Why don't you comment
Weinberg? Okay, I will do that. We can do that. But let me first, I want to take a vote. And I'm going to insist that everybody vote. None of this not voting. So the thing you're voting for is if you needed to bet 50-50 odds or 1 in 3 odds, where would you most like two paths.
These are contradictory. Like, you might think there are many dense vacuola, but we're still rolling down to the minimum. I mean.
No, so these are descriptions of our current state. So if we're rolling, then we're here. Even that doesn't say any. I mean, we could be rolling, and Einstein could be wrong. I mean, that's true. So what is going on? What is the explanation for the observations right now? This is not Chicago. This is California. You're supposed to vote once in many elections.
No, but there are two options.
We need two more candidates? 200 extra candidates? I'm not even going to argue again. I'm not even going to run against it. I might resign and have my lieutenant governor take over, though, before you get a chance.
Can I put another candidate on the ballot?
Okay. Yes?
A six saying something else, like just, you think you covered everything. Is that four? Is that really four?
Yeah, it's either four or five, I think. Something else is one of these.
I don't know. Five is not.
Yeah, you may just draw it number four. Something is very wrong.
No thanks.
Yeah, raise Einstein says something.
So, amongst all the people who contribute to our understanding, there was a mistake that was made. Maybe Richard Nixon is to blame. Mistakes were made. Okay.
Sean, can I comment? You know, even if you could explain away the acceleration, like what, for example, Andre said, you still you might not be able to explain away the CMB, you know, the combination of a flat universe.
Oh, that's right.
And very low omega matter.
Yeah, so there's this poor student has this job, right? Are you fond of this student, by the way? Is this?
What is interesting, in fact, in this scheme, he's not so poor right now. He is not working in physics anymore.
I had a suspicion, but okay.
In this particular scheme, simply because we are living in the center of the world, you have a dipole, but you have suppressed quadrupole, and you have all prior momentum the same as predicted by perturbation theory. So you have just perfect.
And this prediction was made before WMAP came out?
The prediction was made after.
Okay.
No. Actually, the first thing that we have suppression of low stuff and we have this special symmetry, it was a part of the deal from the beginning.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, the symmetry was.
Is this somehow related to the coincidence problem that we live in a special place in time? We want to say we live in a special place in space.
So I mean, I think there are three problems. Why is the cosmological constant small? What is the non-zero what is the non-zero dark energy? And why is the dark energy equal to the matter density today? So I'm hoping to concentrate on the second one here today, but they're all worth talking about. Okay, so how many people think we live in a nearly unique vacuum that we will or will not calculate the energy density of?
1B.
No, we're not going to distinguish. Just one, either A or B. Okay, 4. We should really track this as a function of time because it might have been different. Number 2, many, many dense vacua.
You can vote more than once, right?
No. You're voting for the thing you think is most likely, not as plausible. Most likely. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9, okay, I suspect not everyone's voting. Number 3, that we're evolving. 9, 10, Sol Promer will be very happy. Number 4, somebody made a mistake, perhaps me. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8,
9.
Is that a vote? Okay. That's 20. And number 5, there's some dramatic misinterpretation. We deconstruct the whole thing. Yeah. You were here?
From them. No, I'm master.
Which one were you? You were.
This was 9. So here will be 9. And okay.
So now it's a tie. Anybody else? Sorry, did I miss somebody? Okay, would anyone, my goodness, 20 people think that we're completely wrong. Would someone want to?
No, we're not completely wrong.
I think that the idea of four is that these pictures are much too simplistic.
And that there's something else which we're missing. I mean, we knew that 10 years ago, right? Why were the cost of presence zero? We had no idea. And people
could
have said the same thing, that we were living in a vacuum which is just zero.
No, but so I would not include under here the fact that we're completely clueless about why the cosmological constant is small. I mean, if we figure out some reason why it's small, and it's a constant, then number one will have been right, well, not number four, even if the reason why it's small is something dramatically weird about holography and quantum gravity and so forth.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's not that question, right? I mean, you're not asking whether Einstein's theory is good at short distances.
Einstein et al.
Et al.
Yeah, no, but...
At infinite.
I mean, so...
Okay, that was not the question, I hope.
No, I don't think that was the question.
For me, yeah. I want to ask a much more modest question, which is not just to understand the cosmological constant, which one of these possibilities is right, but which one does string theory favor?
Well, apparently number four. I thought it was number two, but...
A modest question.
Well, that's a time-dependent question.
Right? Yeah, that's true.
Answer.
Right.
So I think the first question would be, what does data favor? I think that's the first, I think it's clearly number one.
Well, there's no experimental difference between number one and number two. It would be hard.
there is no proof, there is no sign whatsoever coming from experiment that, but I believe that there is no sign that there is any time dependence.
I think that's right.
No, but the converse is not true. There's all, the data is completely consistent with three. And it's completely consistent with one. And it will remain so at least for 10 years.
It's not true to me, because the data is model dependent.
Okay. Yeah.
So you have to write a model and then to check whether, you know, and I don't think you can really write a model which, you know, which would be consistent with data.
You can write
it depends on what you mean by write a model.
I could write a model of this.
Are you worried about the long range force?
Here's my model.
Or are you worried just about acceleration?
Well, about, you know, the way this guy is coupled, about the way, you know, this guy is coupled to matter.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So,
kick force or something.
Yeah.
No, but Sean, I would still like to have an answer to my question.
Sorry.
Which means that you should hold your election again, but only allow string theorists to vote. So why the rest of us are not allowed to vote?
I'm all about science, not sociology, so I can't, you know.
No, I just want to know what string theory.
It seemed to be that the voting, from my counting of the votes, there was no pattern. I mean, I think the string theorists voted for all of these. That is true. Okay, so let's talk about what this is supposed to mean.
One, two, and three are predicated on the assumption that Einstein gravity plus four-dimensional field theory is valid up to the Hubble scale, right?
Yes.
Basically.
That's right.
And four is saying that there's something wrong with that statement.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's right.
So it's just the statement that effective low-energy field theory plus gravity up to scales of the order of the Hubble scale and down to whatever TV scale is probably okay.
Right.
I didn't interpret four in that language. I interpreted four as something else. There was no specifics about.
That's why I'm trying to nail this down a little bit more.
Right.
Essentially, the only thing you need to make pictures one, two, and three valid is that statement that Einstein gravity plus some field, plus field, four dimensional.
Well, effective field theory
is a valid
four dimensions.
Low energy field between the TV.
That's how I interpret.
That's what I meant, yes.
Yeah, okay. But the answer to the structure of the potential might not be contained in that effective field theory.
Oh, absolutely.
That's fine,
that.
Yeah, absolutely. But I would still count that as one, two, or three.
Why?
I'm not saying where these potentials came from. I'm just saying what they look like.
Physics.
I think that's different. That's a different question.
I mean, clearly the short distance physics we don't. I don't think anybody in Truman would say there's not short distance physics that we don't understand.
Right. Okay.
The question is,
yes.
Even at the level of fields, there may be strong coupling physics that we haven't controlled yet that does something interesting.
Right. So that's. It is also true that it might be.
That all goes into determining.
Yeah, I'm not worrying about the computational direction. I'm just saying as.
Right, so...
The fact it could be that it's not even terribly unconventional, it's just something about, you know, strong coupling dynamics.
That's right. So the explanation for what the value of the vacuum energy is might be much more prosaic than...
What this effective rho is, it might be...
That's right, yes.
I have a question about two.
Okay.
And this has bothered me for a while. I was talking to Don about it the other day. So for people who believe two, you believe that there's a sort of discrete term where there's a vacuum with our current, you know, value of the vector crop under constant today and something which is maybe twice that, 5 times that, 10 times that, and a whole series all the way up. So doesn't it seem very strange that we happen to live in a universe where we had inflation at a very high scale, 10 to 15 G, and no other periods of inflation down to today? Well, maybe it was a TED or something, okay. But we had, I mean, why
so I think
this landscape have predicted a much more sort of, many more series of inflation?
This is number three. The question is, why don't you have?
That's exactly it. If you have number three, it is the present state of inflation. It's not the future space.
But the question is why between primordial inflation and today's inflation, there has been other inflationary shocks and many different.
Well, that's an observational statement, and the observation.
The point is that observation puts in danger picture number two.
I think this is the question. All pictures in equal danger. You're saying there's something strange about a universe that had more than 60 evolved and then no little wiggles.
So
there could have been an infinite number of states.
Any of those pictures is not justified theoretically, but something to fit the data better than I.
But I don't see what is the point. The only one that counts is the one which is just before nucleosynthesis.
Right. I think two and one are.
We don't know anything, so it could have many
inflationary
epochs. That's not the problem. The only
why
one that counts.
Anything?
Is
I think that's the difference of this. I mean, the answer, I think, to Gary's question is the difference between them being closely separated in field space or in values of lambda. So the idea is that the difference in field space between inflation and now is very small and so on, and you're exploring a very small neighborhood of one particular minimum. So you think that there could other minimum between our previous inflation
and you moved only a little bit around in this
graph. In a staircase,
you have this feature.
But in a random thing, it's likely that we have big jumps like that? Something as small as...
In these models with fluxes, you do.
Models with fluxes.
Because I entered from a high lambda to low lambda.
Well, there's another more prosaic explanation, which may or may not be relevant to the actual models, which is that usually if you end up in a false vacuum, either you stay there forever and never percolate, or you stay there for less than an e-fold. You need to fine-tune things to have 60 e-folds of inflation, which then ends. So that's an unnatural thing about inflation, but I think it's not so unnatural that we don't have any detectable periods of inflation in between the gut scale and today.
Let me try and pick on Pierre's question and try to maybe a little bit focus on the difference between one and three. Okay.
Okay. Wait. Sorry. Behave.
I could have used the following reasoning. Let's say string theory or some other fundamental theory that has a very high scale. I would expect that masses of most particles would be quite high. And so if I had to choose between a constant and a field that rolls, and in conjunction with all the problems about the interactions of this rolling field with the other fields of the nature, then I would say I would go, in this case, for the constant. Because that at least is something that I could have a hope of estimating or explaining. This creates for me so many problems that I may put it aside.
So you're saying that this, if I can reinterpret what, so I think, and what I think Pierre also thinks, is that generically, if you write down a model like this, it requires much more fine-tuning than one of these models. Not only do you have to fine-tune the value, but all the couplings between this field and the mass of the field and so forth. And that's hard. Now, so one way to do it is the reason why I redrew the potential this way, one way to potentially do it is to impose some approximate symmetry and have it be a pseudo-Goldstone boson that therefore is both light and uncoupled. And there's even people who are saying that in string theory, you can get axions that have these properties. But I think it's indisputable that it's easier to do this than to do that and to make it consistent with observations.
Is it
Tony?
I want to go back to Eva's comment and to say that I completely agree with her, that we know remarkably little about quantum field theory. It's very striking. You know, there's this quantum field, we know very, very little. And for example,
there are good books out there on it.
Everything you say depends on this, you know, Landau-Ginzburg paradigm of symmetry breaking, or any symmetry breaking, vacuum, and so on. And the greatest discovery in condensed matter physics of the last 25 years is that there are things that do not fit into this symmetry breaking paradigm, like the quantum Hall effect, and so on.
No, but
you can have different phases without the symmetry breaking.
That's fine. I don't want you to take too seriously the idea that this is really a scalar.
But there could be rich
order parameter
of theories in which
sure.
all kinds of strange behavior could occur. Strong
so,
coupling, you don't know anything.
That's right. So this just means that, you know, you're in some state.
Right.
And you could be in a different state and the energy would be different.
In fact, when you
that's really all it means.
Field, you really do a classical field. Right?
Strong coupling effects and everything, right?
Yeah. Effective field theory.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you're right. It could be that there is some sector of the field theory whose effects, I mean, whose coupling sort of increases as you go to large distances.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, among the fields we know, that doesn't happen.
Right, 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 exactly.
Well, I have something kind of specific in mind, something I'm looking at with David Tong. You have, in ADS-CFT, for example, if you roll a scalar field, so if you do the n equals 4 super Yang-Mills theory that Lyman's lane is dual to ADS-5, MDS-5, if you roll along the moduli space of that theory, it takes forever to get to the origin of, say, the Coulomb branch of that theory, even though the metric on the moduli space is finite distance. So it's kind of a bizarre thing that you wouldn't have known if you couldn't use the dual gravity description. And it's something that pertains to something that seems like a simple.
So it's true in local effective field theory, but you wouldn't have noticed it? Is that the.
It's something about the strong coupling theory.
Right.
That's true that you can see from the gravity side.
Okay, but it would be very hard to see just from doing field theory.
Well, it's something that comes from basically integrating out sort of off-diagonal W boson, like the Bethe theorem. And you can see it from the gravity side in a nice way using ADS-CFT.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a different kind of scalar field dynamics than you would guess from some simple, you know, too overly simple scalar field kinetic term plus potential description.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to apply
right,
to cosmology.
Yeah, so there's no one has proven yet that we need to invoke non-locality or holography or anything like that to explain the small value of the cosmological constant or why it's not zero. So I think that's something to keep in mind.
Well, I mean, but psychologically, what happened when the value suddenly became not zero, you know, the repertory of elegant, you know, small non-zero answers is much less than the repertory of zero.
Well, what's repertory?
Don't.
Is there an element there?
Oh, supersymmetry.
That's not obvious.
Some exact symmetry, yes. That's right.
Keith, would you say that given that supersymmetry can be naturally broken at low scales, why is it, you know, suppose you have something like supersymmetry, why would it be so natural?
I would guess that the argument there is you'd first find the supersymmetry to give you the zero, and then you could sort of complicate it.
Right, but I'm just questioning the statement that the repertoire of small non-zero insurgents.
You're right. But I think I was thinking of psychological.
Yeah, I think I agree. I mean, it was easier to imagine that we were missing something that would set it exactly equal to zero than something that sets it to 10 to the minus 3 electron volts. But, you know, for every problem, there's a simple, elegant, and wrong answer. And so we've ruled out all those wrong answers by the fact the universe is actually accelerating.
I mean, but still, if you had an argument of principle that says in, let's say, string theory, that the cosmological constant is zero, then I would say I need to go to 3 to explain it. And that would be great help.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying so.
So get to work.
So 0 would be good because then it would choose between 3 and 1.
And I agree with Steve. I mean, it looks to me that it's much more natural for string theory, if ever, to give a 0 than to give our measured value. I mean, I don't see why, you know, the fact that supersymmetry is broken per se should imply a cosmological constant of the order of M string of M2
But to the core.
So from this point of view,
logic depends on physics at all scales.
Even though the behavior is 0.5, right? Because observations tells you that it is not zero, but because it's more natural.
No, that's what Rami was saying. If that is the conclusion of ring string theory, then you take number three, and that's why.
But we're not there yet.
Given that the biggest advance in our field in the last 5 years was understanding exactly string theory in backgrounds with non-zero cosmological constant that happens to be negative, it seems very hard now to think that there will be a huge, elegant principle that's general to all of string theory that produces zero. Right? I mean, ADS is the background we have the most confidence in.
But that has an S5. That has an S5. So the two cosmological constant is not zero. The two cosmological constant.
The 10-dimensional cosmological constant
is not zero. It's still zero.
Yeah, the 10-dimensional one.
I mean, a zero cosmological constant does not imply Minkowski, but a non-zero cosmological constant forbids Minkowski.
So we're not at something, yes.
So I would like to compare point 1, 2, 3 with 4. My remark is the following. If I take any of the 1, 2, 3, it seems that everything about CMB, supernova, et cetera, can be fit in a consistent way. If I take 4, there is no available framework to fit all the data. No. People are working, like, Vali is giving all kinds of versions of, like, 4, 5-dimensional.
In so far, one has not found
it. Yeah, I mean, it's very, this is very hard. Once you actually start proposing Lagrangians, or theories, I should say, more generally, that actually break down our idea of general relativity on large scales, you generally end up violating a whole bunch of other things as well.
There are many papers from the University of Chicago.
I know, well, one of them.
My point is, anybody is saying that there is some reasonable version of 4.
That's right.
Put attention to it.
There certainly there were some, and whether they're reasonable, I don't know. Just like all of these 1, 2, 3, there was no reasonable.
Yes. One standards of reasonableness need to be stretched a little bit.
Is that thing with the claim that Vali was making?
No, I am asking, is this at their level to be taken seriously? Because when they have reasonable explanation of small cosmological constant, because we actually have an infinite fifth dimension of things like that. And then something, gravity, start being decoupled at very large distances.
Yeah.
To which extent this scheme is already there?
Yeah, I'm very shocked that this many people believe this, because I think that it's very hard
I don't think it was defined to be something else.
I think there was a confusion.
So we're not voting for fifth dimensional.
What? No. But what? Okay, let's try to define 4. No, but let me first. So before I give my definition, what in your mind doesn't fit into any of these, but nevertheless does fit into Einstein gravity at large distances?
It's just the point. It's to avoid answering a question like that I added to the ballot something
but
else.
That's. But you're not allowed to do that.
Just Tom Banks' idea, which is very hard to define, is that the cosmological constant is the Swiss frequency L to the fourth divided by the Planck.
No, but that's this.
Divided by Planck L to the fourth.
That's a cosmological constant.
No, it requires non-local dynamics of a type that really is more category 4. It requires that the cosmological constant you see is not interpretable as a potential. I mean, it's
allows that.
But it's still the right-hand side of Einstein's equation. So maybe, all right, so I'm gonna be more firm about what I actually believe. Actually distinguish between this, which says that there is some breakdown of general relativity on length scales, four-dimensional. Yeah, on some scale, some scale between, like what he said, a TeV and the Hubble scale.
By using scale. That means you're assuming Wilsonian ideas.
For example, a scale-dependent gene, that would be something like that.
I can use scale to define the theory that I think is wrong, according to this. So I don't know what the right theory is, but this is saying that my idea that there is something called a scale and that there is something called general relativity and it works between a TeV and the Hubble radius is not right. And I think that's a well-defined idea. The right idea might not have an idea of scale, but that would not disqualify my
Can I point out
statement.
Another confusing thing? But most of us are puzzled by the value of the dark energy. And so most of us think if one is true, four has to be true also. Someone is wrong because we have to explain that little space. And so it's hard to vote for one without voting for four.
No, so that's why I want to, so I'm going to, number four, I'm trying to make quite specific, and you can refuse to vote, or you can give me a categorization of something else, but which is more specific than something else. Those are your two options.
Why can't we have four and any of the others?
Right.
Because to explain why the others are true may also
make a new. I count anything that is new and interesting and true on the sort of right-hand side of Einstein's equations as being in the first three.
What if higher dimensions does end up playing an important role? I mean, I don't know how, but suppose it did. Would you put that under one, two, or three?
It would depend. There's two possibilities. One is that there's some effective four-dimensional description, in which case it's in one, two, or three, and the other possibility there's not, in which case it's in four.
Four is a four-dimensional effective Lagrangian doesn't describe it.
Well, or that the effective four-dimensional theory is not Einstein's. Either one of those two possibilities.
Right. I mean, there are two pieces of we're saying about physics at reasonable scales, which is field theory and Einstein's general relativity.
Yes.
Maybe you want to make four or five.
So four is that
wrong. Field theory is wrong at scales between a DV and L scale.
If field theory is wrong, then you still can describe it as giving a constant on the right-hand side of the line.
Okay. So fair enough.
Sean, can I ask you something?
No, not yet. Wait.
Can we have a proposition to the ballot?
Somebody is wrong. Let me finish with my hanging chads here. So first, it's Einstein that is wrong in the sense that general relativity is not a correct theory of gravity. Mm-hmm. There's something called gravity. There's something called general relativity. It's not right. B is that there's something wrong with effective field theory. Is that okay? I feel this is a less comprehensive classification. Who invented effective field theory? Wilson did, I guess. Okay.
You have to specify a scale here because obviously there's something wrong with Einstein and effective field theory.
Steve won't let me do that.
He
doesn't believe.
We know some scales where we believe that Einstein and effective field theory are good, right?
No, okay, so break down to explain the acceleration of the universe. That's that's all I mean.
You also add Heisenberg and Schrödinger, quantum chemistry.
So can I put that under here?
No.
So Sean, 1 over R terms in the action would be A?
Yes, that's right. So this would be a 1 over R term in the Lagrangian.
Yes.
Right, that's under the subcategory of things that have already been ruled out,
right.
But okay.
Right.
I mean, that doesn't stop us from writing papers. Sure. Hey, so Newton's constant leaking out into extra dimensions is under, you know, that's why I don't want to divide this up because I don't know whether that's A or B. Self-tuning is here. That's right. Yes.
Well, but you shouldn't phrase it this way because everybody agrees that there's something wrong with, you know, the mixture of general relativity and quantum field theory.
No, the explanation for the accelerating universe is due to that. Not everyone agrees with that.
David, does the Institute have a lawyer?
Which one?
could it be that quantum field theory is correct, but there is some strong coupling effect that
right.
Long distances?
Right.
So that the vacuum energy really depends on the scale in some way that is not given by classical.
Yes, and that's why I didn't want to subdivide it. So that's under number four.
Quantum field theory is correct, but we just don't know.
If this is right, what I mean is there's something called the vacuum energy. And there may or may not be scalar fields or whatever.
That's why you didn't qualify.
I didn't want to. They made me.
Sean, here's. I'm sorry, but Sean. I think the right way, because we don't understand the problem, it's hard to do this. Here's a way I would like to phrase your vote. When this issue is settled, hopefully in our lifetimes,
Some of ours, anyways.
Yes. It will be in a textbook, or yes, a successor to the textbook.
Right.
Will pictures like the one under one, under two, or three be in the second paragraph of the explanation, or will be there be another picture of quite a different type? Or I think that's what we're just saying.
Way of saying
okay, I think that's...
Can anybody in this room understand that textbook without studying it in a year?
Yeah, you're pretty old.
Right. So will there be, right, when we get it right, will it be possible to phrase the answer in terms like this? Or will it not be possible?
I think that's what you're trying to get at.
Well, yes.
You should phrase the answer to dark energy, not to because what you're constant, because I think this is...
The answer to why the universe is accelerating, yes. Now, the answer to why, what is making the universe actually accelerate today? Why not the question, why is it not accelerating at a much, much higher scale? That's a, I think that's a different
question. I presume that nobody in this room likes Milgram, right? But Turner wrote a paper about Milgram. Does Milgram have anything to say about this whole
model? Okay.
But Turner wrote a paper about Milgram.
Let me redo my vote, and then we can, let me, okay. We can talk about Milgram. I don't think it's right for this discussion, but...
Can we just have a proposition? Is it going to be natural or not? I mean, will there be something we consider natural?
Is it going to be natural or not? Okay, that's a separate proposition, right? That's another ballot initiative. Okay, so now who leaves a number one? In our, so our inclusive reading of number one is that when we figure out an explanation which we're willing to tell our students as to why the universe is accelerating, we can phrase it in a language like this, that there is something called the vacuum energy, that it has a value, and that it couples to Einstein's equations in the way that Einstein would have thought.
You just want the explanation, not just the answer. And the explanation.
The answer.
Shall I also formulate this point number one so that it would really divide people into very polarized camps? Because there is one idea that with the future development of physics, we will be able to uniquely predict one particular vacuum state of our universe. There are simply no other vacuum states. Okay. And another
right. So I think
point,
that's what I tried to do with
AMD. And another point associated with entropic principle is that there are many vacuum states, and we just happen to live in one.
Right.
Okay. So those who do not like entropic principle, they must vote for one, or maybe actually for two, because four say nothing about anything.
Well, the way he phrased it, you could vote for free and just stay agnostic.
And also, you might not like it, but still believe it. I mean, no, but I think that, but that is the general idea. We haven't, I've tried not to use the A word too much, but clearly this is, I mean, if something like this is right, then it empowers the anthropic principle, and you might be forced to it whether you like it or not. If this is right, then the anthropic principle is just wrong. Then it can't make
it's
sense.
It's not wrong, but it's not necessary.
It's not relevant to the real world. Okay, how many people want to vote for number one? One, two, three, four. Good. There's staying. Now we have a much better definition of the same exact number. How many people want to vote for number two? That something like this will be the story we tell. He doesn't like it. How many people want to vote for number three? We're going to measure a W that's not equal to minus one.
Yeah, this, in fact, we will measure. Equation of state will be measured.
And number four, that we're not going to be able to tell stories like this. So somebody switched. You're only allowed to vote once. You're not, I mean, this is... And number five?
How many times?
One or... Well, exactly one, actually. And how many for number five?
Just for consistency.
Just yes. It's an anonymous ballot. Sorry?
Multiple votes.
Yeah, I know. So, okay. Well, there are error bars on the vote. But,
okay, so I have another issue, completely different, hasn't been brought up yet.
Okay, should we talk about, do you want to talk about Milgram first, or do you want to have your issue?
No, that's another issue.
Do you actually want to talk about Milgram?
No.
Let's take a vote. No, we can, okay. Gary, you have an issue.
Just in the spirit of numerology, I'm looking at your far thing there. I mean, mm-hmm. There is another thing we know about physics, which happens at 10 to the minus 3. That's roughly the scale of mass for neutrinos.
Hmm. So it's also the scale of human life. It's a centimeter.
What?
It's about one over 10 to the minus, it's about a millimeter. 10 to the minus 3 electron volts. A human being is halfway in between the Planck scale and the Hubble radius.
A geometric
meter. Right.
The point is, if we're looking for some new physics or some new mechanism which might help explain the Kalkweber constant, I mean, I don't know. It doesn't seem likely, but you know, there is another scale. Something happens at 10 to the minus 3. Yeah, maybe there's something to do with it.
Yeah.
Wasn't the magnetic field in the galaxy?
I only know it in Gauss, but I think.
It's the energy scale.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
Has there been any, this is just for information, has there been any paper on Gary's idea of people writing preprints linking neutrinos to dark energy?
At the beginning, that was one of the interesting ideas.
Dark matter.
If omega were one before we knew that, it could have been in principle.
I've heard people. Yeah, I've heard people mention ideas. I've never seen it in print.
He gave that talk at Strings. I don't remember the idea.
I don't remember how it got around the free streaming problem.
Yeah. Several people proposed that.
Free streaming isn't a problem here because you don't need to congregate these complexes. This is a dark energy everywhere.
I hear it.
Yeah.
It's not
talking about dark energy.
These are very different. So, I mean, I think the hope is, my bet is that if they have anything to do with anything, it's because they're both a seesaw-like mechanism, right? That there's some low-energy scale that you get by suppressing some high-energy scale. So you get 10 to the minus 3 electron volts by taking the electric weak scale and the Gott scale to get a neutrino mass. You could also get it by taking the supersymmetry scale and the Planck scale. But no one has a theory along those lines. So let me, okay.
I think that this discussion was very theoretical. And
yes?
In the sense that we would need to understand which of these possibilities has any chance ever being experimentally tested.
Yes, good. That's what I was going to say next, actually.
Yeah, okay, cool.
So what I was going to say next was, I think that the people who voted for this, if they really believe this, they should predict that we will not measure W equals minus 1, because there's no reason to.
Or whatever.
Right. They might think that we'll predict the cosmological constant uniquely by its own new principle, and W should be minus 1.
Yes.
Then it's 1.
That's this possibility.
No. So what do you mean by W? I mean,
the thing that observers think they're measuring. No, you don't, because you go out there and you look at supernovae, and you ask the question, if I'm in a conventional cosmology, what would W be? And you figure out what the constraints on that are.
You mean by some H dot over there? Yeah. I mean, you define W.
That's right.
Before, you have to represent the data somehow.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I was asking what it meant by W.
Yeah. So, I mean, if there's something really crazy going on, I don't see any reason why it should look exactly like Einstein's equations with a cosmological constant. Right?
Crazy.
It won't be crazy a posteriori after it's shown to be correct, right? But if it's something dramatic, I mean, typically the tentative
of making falsifiable predictions.
That sounds almost
because,
anthropic.
Yeah, these other things, as you admit. Aren't going to, especially if you invoke the proper principle to select out, aren't going to give anything that is going to be essentially testable for the next decade.
So So there is one question here. So let's say that our vacuum is chosen anthropically. Should there be connections between the value of the cosmological constant and the other constants of nature? Or it could still be calculable, or it might not. Do people have a prejudice one way or the other?
You could simply show that string theory doesn't have that many vacuum. There used to be an estimate that there were a million VMs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the number 10 to 60, actually, I thought the number 10 to 60 is only, that like, 10 to 120 is only being knocked around after the discovery of the cosmological constant. Until I know Andre's book, written 15 years ago, you have this estimate 10 to the 1500.
Oh, this is this was from some paper by Mike Duff calculating the number of complexifications in an equilibrium.
Really?
Yeah.
I hadn't seen that number.
10 to the 1500.
Well, so you basically predicted everything. or Mike Duff.
You can't swing a cat without hitting a different value of the cosmological constant in this universe. It nevertheless might be true that. In each vacuum, so there is a formula which is true in every single vacuum that relates the supersymmetry breaking scale to the cosmological constant, right? That might very well be true. So there's no.
Since you like to hold these elections, I was wondering if you had in other places or other times held an election named Anthropic Principle.
I don't remember doing it.
What's the correct, quote unquote, correct attitude?
So,
if I want to be a respectable physicist,
it's socially rewarded.
Yeah, what should
So I can tell you two things. One is I did hold a vote in front of an audience of general relativists and historians and philosophers of science. And the vote was, do you think there is such a thing as the cosmological constant problem? And the vote was overwhelmingly no. There's just no problem. It's just a value, and we went out. And, no, it's not anthropic at all. They just said we measured it. It's a constant. There's no expectation for what it should have been in their mind.
It's obvious. I mean, there's no we don't know h bar. So as long as you set h bar equal to zero,
no one. To them, it's an arbitrary constant, and they don't believe in effective field theory intuition. Okay, I'm just letting you know. That was one data point.
No, I want to be a respectable physicist.
So I think the respectable thing to do is to not...
What should my attitude
be? I'll help you out here. Yes. Your attitude is you should disparage the anthropic principle and not believe it until you believe it, and then you should say, okay, well, I'm forced to believe it. And then you can never go back. Any other questions?
This value of concept of nature, there's nothing logically wrong that I can see in assuming that there is another constant we have, let's say, measured, that's the value. And that's what it is. The same way that, well, in this sense, H bar is.
Yeah, so that's.
H bar is a unit of that. Yes.
Right. Is it this 10 to the minus 15?
That's what I meant. So
that we need to explain.
Meaning that there is another ratio of pairs that we that appeared in the theory for particular constants over time.
Yeah.
There is nothing logically inconsistent about such defeatist attitudes.
So
they have been historically proven wrong. I mean, every time in history we measure tons of things that we have no impact on. And often.
Okay. Steve?
Actually, as long as we're on the subject, I would like to ask this audience for a further viewpoint. Despite my rather strongly held prejudices, which I'm doing my best to overcome, I find Weinberg's argument about the cosmological constant impressive.
Yes.
It's impressive that this very difficult to explain number, you can get quite close to it with rather simple estimates, as far as I understand. Am I being hornswoggled, is this in fact
okay.
Impressive?
So let me tell people who might not know what we're talking about. The idea is, as I understand it, and people can correct me, the idea is, imagine that there are many, many different parts of the universes, different vacua if you like, in which the cosmological constant takes on different values, and in some sense, there's an equal number of all of them, or an equal volume of all of them, or something like that, some sense that no one is going to tell you what it is. Keep everything else fixed. All the other constants of nature, the fluctuation amplitude for cosmological perturbations and so forth, and calculate a number which is the expected value of the cosmological constant in a galaxy. cosmological constant is small, you don't. If it's large and positive, you don't make any galaxies, so they're ripped apart. If it's large and negative, the universe recollapses, you don't make any galaxies. So the claim is that a typical observer on a galaxy observes an expectation value for rho lambda, absolute magnitude, which is about between 1 and 10 times rho matter, which is what we observe. We get 2 or 3.
1 in 10, is that?
Yes.
I see.
So the original time he did it, it was between 1 and 1,000,
yeah.
And that's because he just said, can you make a galaxy or not? But later on, it was pointed out that if the cosmological constant is 1,000 times bigger, you make a galaxy or two. If it's 10 times bigger, you make millions of galaxies. So a typical galaxy, this was made before it was observed. This was the only correct prediction for the value of the cosmological constant.
That's the only observable cosmological constant.
That is also true. But it could have been wrong.
That's his question. Is it empty or is it
empty? So the reason why I think it's extremely suspicious is you keep everything else fixed.
You mean if you took a random sample of...
Then you can't do the calculation.
But do you have a sense that it would only be some very narrow window?
I would like to explain, you know, both of these hierarchies, and maybe you should marginalize over both of them, the good old hierarchy problem as well as the cosmological constant problem. And I suspect that the anthropic principle will predict that supersymmetry is broken at the Planck scale, and all the particle masses are at the Planck scale, because then you get a lot more fast-moving observers going around observing things. But I don't know.
But would this differentiate between 1 and 3, for example? this argument...
I think, yeah. It rules out 1 and 3.
There's a version of
2 and 3, you mean?
You can embed it in 2 and, right? So the question is whether we are now at the minimum and there's
so,
a real constant, or are we approaching...
The only physics motivation that I know of for 3 is the coincidence problem, which we haven't really addressed. I think that 3 is an alternative to 2 in the sense that you might hope, by making your dark energy dynamical, to give it a kind of dynamics which makes it take over today. No one has really successfully done that. The closest you come is people have made either models where it becomes important after matter radiation equality, or it becomes important over and over again, and we happen to live in one of those accelerating epochs. So I think that no one, so if you believe this, I don't see any reason to believe the anthropic principle. That would be my answer.
I like to say one of my objections to the anthropic principle, which is just historical. I think that if at the beginning of the 20th century, the people who were to invoke the anthropic principle, we may have never invented quantum mechanics. So anthropic principles to explain all these puzzles.
Arguments of incalculability about continuously.
Sure.
Yeah.
Never
you couldn't calculate.
So it's an ineffective way of trying to solve the problem. It's not useful, but
right. But it might be right. Okay, David, yes.
Well, the question about the Weinberg argument. You give there's an estimate for lambda of order 1 to 10. What about the lower limit? Isn't it really just
because you
then?
No, because you predict that the magnitude, so you predict the value of rho lambda is between minus 10 and 10, but therefore I predict that the magnitude is going between 1 and 10. It could be 0, but it's only 10% chance. That's why I put absolute value signs here. If you pick a random number between minus 10 and 10, the chances that you pick 10 to the minus 3 are very small.
That's
all it's saying. It is assuming a flat probability distribution, and there were papers back and forth. Vilenkin made one argument, and Weinberg made another argument, and
you could one could make the same argument that people have to say, well, the neutrino mass cannot be too large, otherwise you cannot form galaxies because it would suppress Lasker's power. So it has to be just around 0.1 electron volts.
People are shameless, yes.
And you should ask those people if neutrino mass turned out to be smaller, would they consider anthropic principle falsified?
So, I mean, I think that, again, I don't like the anthropic principle, but it might be right.
Right,
you need to define the ensemble of universes that actually exist. So that's why we're paying the string theorists the big bucks here to figure out what are the actual vacua that we're allowed to pick from.
observable things. I mean, there was this sense that 1, 2, and 3 are not experimentally verifiable in the sort of way that...
3 is certainly distinguishable from 1 and 2.
Sure.
1 and 2...
I just want to make the comment that it's quite
maybe
conceivable that there could be some that one way of getting some experimental observation that tells you something about this is if you have a theory which agrees with 2 and also makes other predictions, you know, if you verify that those other predictions are true, you have evidence that 2 is true.
Yes. Sure. No, you can experimentally test the framework in which any of these guys is embedded.
That's the only comment.
So you might come to believe one of these, even though by itself there's no experimentally distinguishable signature between either one.
Sure. I guess the comment is 4 is maybe easier to verify experimentally.
Yeah. In fact, many versions of it have been ruled out already. So that's.
Well, I mean, if you're actually hoping that in string theory you can verify two, cosmological constant would be the last thing you look at. I mean, the constraints on acceptable.
Agreed.
String theory are much stronger from many other measurements we have about the real world. Some of which would, if they were slightly different, would preclude life as well.
Sure, but you might be able to verify string theory by experiment and then calculate that string theory predicts two, and then. Then you have to work hard.
So for those of you who think that, you know, I mean, I should say that if you go to theology conferences, they use this as a proof for the existence of God, okay? That the cosmological constant and so forth are finely tuned to allow for the existence of life. So you're on the nice, you know.
Well, I think the historical example also shows us that there were some things people thought that they were calculable, but then like quantum mechanics was a good example. So there were some things that classical physics
Maybe we should postpone discussion on anthropic principle until I discuss next week eternal inflation. Because what we are discussing right now, when you did not touch the subject and really discuss it on the philosophical grounds, then you have one kind of attitude. When you kind of work with it, then you eventually
not it,
but just gradually you will see that the ground for the opposite belief is very narrow. It's just like, let me maybe postpone it until...
There are stages. It's like there's denial and then anger. Eventually acceptance.
Well, for example, I can tell you about this cosmological constant bound because, in fact, I have climbed existence of this bound half a year before Steven Weinberg, and that was based only on the basis of anthropic principle and eternal inflation, and I've considered the model of this third type with a potential like that, and in this potential, the scale of field just drifts during inflation, and the scale of field, if the slope is very small, in different parts of the universe may have different volumes. So what I said that if the value is larger than approximately 100 times greater than present energy density, then the universe would exponentially expand right now, and total energy density right now would be exponentially small. Meanwhile, if you are downstairs, then the universe would have negative potential energy density. At the present, it would have collapsed. So these two facts allowed to make this bound approximately at that time, approximately 100 times larger than the present energy density of the universe. And then you think about it, you say, what's wrong about that? Then Weinberg made this upper bound more rigorously derived on the basis of study of galaxies. And then there were subsequent investigations by him and by Virenkin, which squeezed it up to this 10 times.
And I think this is the only prediction of the cosmological constant which is not zero. So far, all other non-anthropic predictions were exactly lambda must be zero. So from some point of view...
Would you regard predicting the up to the down quark mass ratio as greater than one, a prediction of the anthropic principle?
Well, I would not count that far.
We can start because I don't know.
The anthropic principle is not a universal weapon. Like, for example, if you would like to understand what is the reason why theta vacuum, this theta or strong CP violation is not as large as it is anthropically allowed. Well, anthropically allowed theta can be very large, anthropically known. You will not have anthropic explanation for many things, but for some of them, you can. And if you can, why you just throw it out? We, so far, we do not have explanation why the mass of the electron is so small, why mass of the proton is 100 times lighter than mass of the W boson, and maybe in the future theory we will have just an explanation of it predicting that this is just one vacuum and we should calculate it. And if we will not try to do so, then it is a defeatist attitude. But if we insist from the start that we must have just one vacuum, this is a very narrow assumption.
But Andrei, in the discussion you presented, I mean, you could apply it to this picture number three, saying that this vacuum is unique, but simply where we are today,
on this slope, it's
anthropically determined.
It's just the question whether the physics is fundamental or environmental.
And then the value of M up and down and M same would be uniquely fixed. But simply, it's just where cosmologically we end up.
Can we predict that we live right now on the surface of the Earth if the total volume of this shell where we can live is so minuscule as compared to the total volume of the universe? Well, we cannot live in empty space. So there are some trivial statements, and on these trivial statements, why should one just get rid of them and not use of them? We cannot live in empty space. That's trivial. We cannot live on the surface of the sun also.
We can't live in the universe where the up and down fork rate mass ratio is different.
Right.
So we're finished with that problem is explained.
Well, no. We are not finished, but we will be able to say, well, at this stage, I see at least that the anthropic principle allow me to sleep well and try to concentrate on some other problems which don't have these anthropic explanations, which are many.
Okay, Juan?
Yeah, I don't see exactly why the anthropic principle is different than just we made a measurement and we observed that the cosmological constant is bounded within this region. Because the state of argument is like, well, if it was much bigger, galaxies wouldn't have formed. Okay, would they wouldn't have formed? Maybe some other kind of life would have evolved in some other kind of, I don't know, in neutron star, whatever.
Yeah, I don't know.
Some life there. And they're explaining why lambda is in their region anthropically and so on. But really, in a theory of quantum gravity, I think what we have is all ranges of lambda. We measure one value, and that's input for the rest of things we calculate.
No,
so I don't see why it's different than any other measurement.
I completely agree, but the reason people get emotional is that you sometimes then end up claiming that something will have, will just have to be one of the input experiments, that it won't be predicted. And people would say that the theory with the least experiments wins. Like, the theory that takes the least input and produces the most wins, and people don't like it if something is fundamental, lambda will have to be one of the, essentially, the inputs.
Pierre?
Well, the problem with the anthropic principle is that, you know, the discussion is immediately polarized. It could be partly right, as Juan was saying. If we do quantum gravity, after discussing probability, it might make sense. And the role of the observer, we know from quantum mechanics that it's important. So also the role of the observer might be important. That doesn't mean that the whole, the stricto sensu anthropic principle is right, but it could be that part of it makes sense.
So I think it's getting late, so we'll let Juan have the last word.
Okay, so when we measure the spin of electron, we measure it up, right? You can say anthropically. If I had it to be up, my mind wouldn't be in the state that, you know, it's like any other, this is no. any other measurement.
Coming to David's point, I mean, would you say that it's the same as having measured a map over and down? Or?
Yeah, it's the same. Yeah, well,
so you think a map over and down can take many values?
Well, it could or could not. I mean, the full theory would tell you, but suppose that you allow different values, maybe it could.
That's the question.
That is the question.
Well,
no, I agree this
so
is a good question, but...
From the cosmological context, I see this as I say, I measure today where I am, and maybe I happen to be just on the right spot.
And how about energy levels in biological molecules? I
believe that some of the problems appear because different people understand bioanthropic principle different things. Mm-hmm. And what actually is possible to understand by it, and I believe the only consistent way, is we make first measurements about, make simple measurements. Like we look at ourselves, even without any microscope. We look at our friends, we see that we're using microscopes, we see that we are made from carbon, etc. So we make some simple measurements. After we make the simple measurements, we can already make predictions for other parameters of the universe, which would be consistent with these simple measurements. For example, if you make the simple measurements and also measurements of how gravity works, etc., then you can make a prediction that cosmological constant cannot be 1,000 times larger than present body of the cosmological constant. So you would not even look at it in this regime of values. Or especially, it cannot be negative 10 to the 3 of the present values. So on the basis of simple experiments, you can make more complicated predictions because other possibilities are incompatible with the simple experiment that you make. And this is a very simple thing.
I completely agree with this.
Yeah,
I agree with this.
There is nothing specifically anthropic about that.
What I don't like is when people say that the fact that life exists and so on, and that life exists, this is the part I don't like.
Okay, I'm very proud of myself for having guided discussion for so long before talking about the anthropic principle. But now that we're there, I think we should just declare victory. And do we have another discussion Tuesday? Is that? We don't have anybody lined up to lead one. If anyone would like to lead an informal discussion on Tuesday, let us know. All right, let's thank me for leading me.